right then.
Actually, I think when the metric is diagonal things, right, you can do solve it, and you can do the easier way. Right? I'm just substituting into the formula.
But you can just write down the components of the Einstein tensor or the region tensor, which are anything better. So you just, so did you drag the Christoffel symbols by hand or what did it make up?
I did by hand. But the,
okay.
I think I come down to.
No, that's fine. Okay, so how many of you, so you did by hand, Brian did it by hand? Nathan did it by hand?
Me too.
You did make up, you did make up. Okay, that's funny. Yeah. I remember we had a galactic dynamics course at Princeton, and we had to do like an integral, and like half of the class was American, the other half was various international students, and all the Americans used Mathematica, all the international students did by hand. now I guess it's an easier.
It's more exactly the inverse. The internationals use Maple.
Yeah, you are Canadian, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. The word is interesting. Okay.
I'm not sure what I can learn from Maple. It takes time, but at the end, I don't.
Well, I mean, if you know how it's supposed to be done, I mean, that if you do it once, then. Just you know how to, I mean, you don't have to do it every for every single metric, but if you do it that once at least, you know what, I mean, you have an idea about what's involved. And I mean, well, for example, if at some point the Mathematica gives you an error, for example, I mean, for example, you have an idea what could have gone wrong. Yeah.
Did we do this for like a general intro trial in Kotlin? I thought we only did it for five. I don't remember going through the full general.
The professor did it for us. He didn't require us to do it. We just saw him go through it. I remember.
But now you did.
He didn't use GR, though. He used like the only in the
for Friedman metric.
Yeah. He didn't do it through the general relativity method.
There is a Newtonian derivation of the Friedman equations, which we can talk about later. But the rigorous derivation is this one.
I thought it was helpful. I haven't gone through that before. From GI.
Okay, good. And now you did. Okay, perfect. So you learned something new. Okay, and so what do we get? So what are the Einstein equations?
Not to raise this board and use another one. I'm pulling up this solution, Brian.
Well, you can just try
just
to
put it
underneath.
Yeah.
There are lots of.
Put the board up so we can use other boards.
He will see it eventually.
Yeah, I will see it.
He needs it.
Using the form of Einstein to cancel that.
So which was the class that you took, Professor Girard?
It was the
475.
Yeah, that was it. This is course 95 astrophysics with focus on cosmology.
Who was the teacher?
Mike Hudson.
When did you have it?
That was here.
Two years ago.
3 years ago for me.
3 years ago?
Yeah.
That was it 3 years ago or 2 years ago?
Huh.
It's the same class, same year.
And we ran it the same year then.
Okay.
Was it 3 years ago?
Yeah, because I took it my second year. Which is second to last year.
Okay. But you can figure that out later, but let's see what for us is done. Okay, so good. So you have an equation for A double dot, an equation which has both A double dot and A dot in it. Can I actually get an equation that doesn't have A double dot in it?
Yes.
We get two equations in the end.
Do you know off the top of your head what that equation is? If you eliminate A double dot from these two questions,
yes.
Okay, sure.
This are called the three-way equation.
Sorry?
I think this equations are called the three-way equation.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you can of course call any combination of the two Friedmann equations, but there are two independent equations.
Yeah, the one up the top right is specifically the Friedmann equation, and the other one is the Friedmann acceleration equation.
So. Now this A, I guess as Brian mentioned the last session, is this called the scale factor because the whole spatial metric scales with this. So you change all the distances basically in this co-moving coordinates in R and theta coordinates by that factor of A. And since it's only A that depends on time, all the distances increase by that factor of A. So many people talk about the cosmic expansion, all of that is captured by the fact that A changes can change with time. And so people often set K to be, if it's positive, set it to be 1, if it's negative, minus 1, if it's 0, then of course it's 0. But it's not necessary, so you can really, K could be any number.
Yeah, properly it should be 1 over the scale radius squared to in order to work out in that equation.
Yeah.
At least for positive curvature, that makes sense. It doesn't make so much sense for negative curvature.
Yes. Now, the Ricci scalar for the spatial metric is just K divided by A squared for the spatial part of the metric. And if the curvature, Ricci scalar has a dimension of, so this, I guess I'm translating what Brian was saying. Ricci scalar for the spatial part of metric for this part, let's call it RS. This is K over A squared, I meant it in 2, I don't remember. And this has a dimension of 1 over lecture scalar squared. So as Brian said, you can call this 1 over radius of curvature squared. This would be a definition for curvature. It turns out that this metric is what you get from, I think, a four-dimensional sphere. And that's, this would be the radius of that, yes. Indeed. If K is positive, if K is negative, then it could be like a hyperbole or something.
You can't express negative curvature in 4D. You just have to work with the metric. There is no way to embed it in higher dimensional space.
No, there is an embedding.
Well, not higher dimensional, Euclidean space.
Yeah, it's going to be a hyperboloid in a higher dimensional space.
You could get a local representation, but not a universal.
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, probably. So, okay. So this is a scale factor. And so what are we supposed to do next? So How do we know k is constant? That's a fun question. We have assumed k is constant, I think, in this derivation, because they put without any derivative.
Well, that comes from the homogeneity assumption that if the distribution of matter in space is the same everywhere, the curvature should be the same everywhere.
No, that's right, but why wouldn't it change with time? So that is actually...
well, if it did change with time, it would be a function of A, and then we could still move A out of that function to leave some constant part behind. And it just once you do that, we get it like this, where it is out on the left.
Yeah, that's exactly true. So basically, what you have is that your radius of curvature could depend on time, but you absorb all the time dependence in this A. And you basically extract, factor out the time dependence. So by definition, what is left here is time dependent. So because basically what you have here is a sphere of sorts, which is characterized by just one number, and which if you extract it, then whatever is left is if you factor it out, whatever is left is time independent. Good. So that's that. So k is constant. That we know, and it turns out that if we, these two equations are actually equivalent to each other if you assume that k is constant. Now, if you assume k is constant, then you can combine these equations to get the second law or the first law of thermodynamics. So how do we do that?
That's part D, really?
That's part D.
Yeah. Just play with these two equations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just took the first, differentiated it, substituted it in,
mm-hmm.
used a little algebra and calculus to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing fancy, really.
Just take the derivative of that first one and then plug it into the second one.
You can just multiply by a squared.
Simplify
things. Because then the k term.
Yeah, but the exponent term. So you really should take the derivative of that and this ps. And but yeah, you're right. That's you don't want k. So to get continuity equation, you don't want k to be there. So you multiply by a squared. All right.
I mean, it all works out in the end. It's going to go away from when you plug in that if you leave it in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a lot easier to multiply by a squared and a pink.
So you all of you managed to do it, right? Okay, so it's not too fancy. So good. So why is this equation? So can you write down what you get? Okay, so in what sense do you agree that this looks like the first law of thermodynamics and why? So U is the total energy. So it could be rho, which is energy density times A cube. And A cube is like volume.
So this is the first of M
times. Yes. This is a derivation for the first of M times.
Well, in expanding space, kind of, since we have that A.
Huh?
A is constant, then it's not expanding.
But the, like, you wouldn't go through all of this to derive a constant.
So it's interesting. So, but the thing is that you could have written this. This is a property of matter. It doesn't have anything to do with gravity, the first of thermodynamics. So you could have written this from the outset without knowing anything about gravity. That basically dE plus pdV is zero. Because, but if you just, you know, if your universe is homogeneous and isotropic, you can always go to the freely falling frame in the initial frame. And density everywhere is the same. And density times volume is energy. And dE plus pdV is constant. So there is this consistency equation between thermodynamics, or let's put it this, between energy conservation and Einstein equations. And this is an intrinsic property of, a very interesting property of Einstein equations, that in general relativity, this equation, the meaning of the factors, and energy conservation, which in general this is energy and momentum are part of the same vector, it becomes energy momentum conservation, is just to say that is a command to saying that this has zero divergence. This has zero divergence. So this is the covariant derivative. So the covariant derivative of this perspective is zero. This is equivalent to energy momentum conservation. And this also has zero divergence, and this is just a mathematical property of the form of the G mu nu as a function of metric. And this is the consistency condition that that is satisfied, which is basically what led to the derivation of this equation. That this is really the only combination that is consistent, because you already know on the right hand side, you know that you have, so you can go to the freely falling frame, and energy momentum is conserved, because you know that from a special relativity and from simple symmetries. And on the left hand side, you know this should have a zero divergence if these two are to be equal. So that actually led to the special form for the Einstein tensor.
It's the only combination of the two tensors.
It's the only rank two tensor that has zero divergence. If you want to drive it out of metric, and I think probably it's conditioned on how many derivatives you want to have.
Okay.
I mean, I guess if you have too many derivatives, maybe it's possible. I'm not sure, but. And if you want to have the only second derivative from metric, this is the only possible. So that's the sense in which Einstein equation is unique if you want to respect energy momentum conservation. So, and that's why you could either derive this from energy momentum conservation, and in this case, you only have time dependence, it's just energy conservation, or you could derive it from Einstein equations that both give you the same result.
Can you go backwards and rederive some of those things?
That's a very good point. There is there are people who say that can be done. I think first Ted Jacobson pointed out, or maybe people did it at different ways. But there's a paper that's famous, is basically a thermodynamic derivation of Einstein equation. If you I guess kind of identify area with entropy, then you can derive Einstein equation from basic second law of thermodynamics.
Interesting.
Yeah, in a sense, that's a claim. And that's not the claim, because you can rigorously show this.
They claim they get more general theories.
You can do it more generally. You would think that then you have to modify second law of thermodynamics, or sorry, your definition, how area is related to entropy in modified theories of gravity, other theories of gravity. Then you get modification of the Einstein equation. But if you just assume area is entropy, then you get Einstein. Which is interesting, which is also, this started from the black hole thermodynamics, which is Hawking first postulated that there's a temperature for area for the horizon of black holes, and the associated entropy with that is just the area of the surface of the black horizon. And this was later generalized to any situation by Jacobson. But yeah, this is the first regularization shown just for the black holes. That was like 30 years ago. So it's interesting that general relativity has this thermodynamic property. Seems to have this thermodynamic property that you can, there might be some relation between second law of thermodynamics and the Einstein equation. Okay, thank you very much, Horace. So I guess you did both parts C and D. Good. And so we want a volunteer to do part two. Yes, second part question two. Yeah, this is really easy. No, but I guess derivation is very easy, but I guess if I just write down the final result, if you just write down the final result, it's open to that part.
Yeah. Well, derivation's open to the math part too.
Right.
Of course, I'm doing this coming off of one, so it's all relative.
Yeah.
So for dust, we have pressure equals zero, so the Conway equation becomes equals zero. I mean, this is constant, and rho dust goes as a to the negative three. If we plug this into the Friedman equation and note that curvature is zero, a squared is equal to g. And then set a solution. See that just by substitution. I did the exact normalization constant.
So is that the only solution?
For this case?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
Because the differential equation is the first derivative, so you would think that would be a constant of integration.
Yeah, I was going to. No, there's also constant within the 2/3. Like it would be t plus some constant to the 2/3, just because it's arbitrary what time you use to start this.
The origin of time is also another constant. So that's one constant. That's one integration inside the power. So t plus t naught. No. T plus t naught to the power.
I think it's 2/2 or something like that.
In the end, we get 2/3.
No, it's t minus t naught.
T minus t naught.
Everything to the power of 2/3.
Okay.
So it's just saying origin of time is arbitrary.
Yeah.
The way I actually did it is defining it so that A of 0 present day is 1.
Oh, okay.
And
I see. So that's another way of getting that cut. So if you set A to be 1, yeah.
That'll give you a value for what you put in there, and essentially it's just so that you have that prefactor times t all plus 1, just so when t is 0, it's 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. And k, I guess, is 0 here.
K is 0.
Yeah. So people usually set a equal as the runner, say a equal to 1 at today. It's kind of arbitrary. If k is 0, you can always do that. If k is not 0, then you have a choice. You could either set k equal to 1 or minus 1, but then a, you cannot choose any normalization for a. That fixes normalization for a. Or you can set a to 1 today, but then k would be a number that you cannot is not going to be arbitrary. And the combination that's constrained is k over a squared. That's the physical observable. Okay, thank you. And what is it? So the radiation and curvature.
So radiation is similar. I mean, the continuity of gradient becomes this. Multiply by a. So then A has this dependence.
And finally, the curvature dominator.
So curvature is really simple. Like you have rho and pressure equals 0, so you can just plug into the Friedman equation, and you get a naught squared. K is negative, so this has a solution of k0, but we're assuming k is negative.
Mm-hmm.
So this has
So if you have all the three of them, what would be the order of the
k? So this is most dependent on time, and then the dust is second most dependent, and then the radiation is this. Is that right?
So, but my question is, so at every time, which one dominates at every time, radiation dominates at every time, then in between, because radiation goes 1 over 8 to 4, so very small radiation. Then match with dominance because it goes with 1 over a cubed. Curvature, how does that, curvature dominates at the last because, why does curvature dominate at the last?
Because as t goes to really big numbers, it's the most important.
But no, but you cannot really trust these solutions because these solutions, yeah, all use, assume that that's the only thing that's present. So,
everything else decays, right?
Compared to yeah, so the relevant thing to look at is k over a squared, basically. Because that decays is slower than anything, than both radiation and matter. They both decays 1 over a. They decays 1 over a cubed and 1 over a to the 4. So curvature decays is the least slowest. Now, I guess the problem you're going to work on to this next week, well, and they're going to talk, we're going to talk about next week. You're also going to look at vacuum, which for which P is constant, rho and P are constant. And that, actually, that can dominate even the curvature at late times. Okay, good. So that's this problem. And I guess since these are so easy, then why don't you do the last problem first?
Actually, I didn't.
You didn't do that problem. Okay. Who's going to do that problem? Now, actually, no, let's see. Why don't we let Mina do that problem? Because I think Mina hasn't done a problem this day. Have you? I don't remember.
I did it last time.
You did it last time?
Yes.
Okay, so I forgot the time. Before I forget, I probably all know that that our best of the best is now are consistent with k equals 0, so there is no evidence for that.
If we want to include the cosmological constant in those equations, how does it change them? I've seen it.
So that's the vacuum that I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you have a constant density, which you could have if pressure is negative density, minus the p is minus rho, then that's gonna dominate all of that, I'd say. Okay.
Yeah, you could express it in one of two ways. One is just adding a constant to the end of the Friedmann equations, which causes extra positive acceleration. And another is by, you know, adding a source of energy to the universe, which, as you said, that's pressure proportional to negative density.
Mm-hmm. And then you can add dark energy.
Dark energy. So the simplest model for dark energy is a cosmological, is a constant. But if it changes with time, then it could be slightly different. So then P is not going to be exactly minus negative rho. It's going to be slightly different.
But that model has served us well to this point. It, the benchmark model which incorporates that is pretty accurate.
Good, so...
So if you write down the equation for geodesics, but we talked about this before I only first had this suggestion that me and Fargo was a little bit different. So we used MAPLE to calculate for us the geodesic equations.
Uh-huh.
But we made an assumption that I don't know if that would be okay anymore. So...
Which is to say it's the particles just moving in the r direction.
Yes, so the reason is, as this universe is homogeneous and isotropic, right? So you can always go to Cauchy frame because particles move in a straight line because there is no force that affects it. So you can go always to a frame where p times phi are constant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you rearrange these two equations and we just remove the lambda of this word size. These two equations. It's just the philosophy. That gives us different sort of velocity and the escape factor as one of the aims.
So there's just one minus we have dropped in our solution. In the second line, there is a minus 2 a delta over a.
Is it?
No. At the end.
Oh.
It's minus, but in the line under it,
there's
no minus. So this will be positive. The final answer will be
okay.
Positive.
It looks right.
That's not how I did it.
But yeah.
I did it a little different.
Yeah.
But here, I think if k is 0, then that's what you're saying is v squared is negative minus 2 over a squared. That doesn't sound right. There is something.
No, it should be another minus at the end. So, yeah.
That's
and we should also have some constant multiplying. That just equals V naught times whatever.
Mm-hmm. But Brian, did you start by the same equations, or you had different equations?
No, my geodesic equations were different.
Okay, that's the reason.
Yours are different.
Yeah.
How different are they?
Very. Let me just sketch
okay.
them up.
So let's compare it next to each other. Thank you.
These are not our equations, these are Maple's equations.
Maple's
equations.
They
might
be wrong, that's the model.
Yeah. No, this, I think that that's the magic component, but we'll see.
Yeah, okay. Well, I went the geodesic equation just in raw form is.
I think if Einstein was alive, he should have used Maple.
He wouldn't or wouldn't?
He would, maybe.
He would. I don't
know. That is pure
technique. Well, I would have started again from the action as I did. But essentially, it should give you the same result.
Okay, so that's the geodesic equation. What I want is. I just first assuming it's all in the r direction, then I calculated all possible affine connections with r and t, and the non-zero ones I got were
Sorry, just one thing. By neglecting the terms that have theta and phi in those equations,
mm-hmm.
we have somehow assumed that we're looking at these equations in big R's. Okay?
Why?
Because the equations that have the change of theta and phi have R in their denominator. And in order to neglect them, we can go to large R's.
Well,
and we're just choosing that.
But no, but it's just a different choice of coordinates. You can always go to a coordinate, pick your origin so that theta and phi that are zero, because every point is like every other point in the homogeneous isotropic universe. And then there is no assumption. It's just.
But these equations will change because it's a transformation. They won't be the same equations as.
Well, these would be in this new coordinate system. Yes, these aren't true in every any arbitrary coordinates.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
So that's what you get, and
those are the applying tensions which give the equations. I use Talon in my own solutions. I'll just change the line to match those.
By the way, your calculations, that was true for photons and massive particles, or did you make any assumption?
Well,
I guess the.
The geodesic equations
are the same.
Are the same for photons.
So you're saying this is true for all
everything.
For everything.
For everything,
yeah.
Huh?
Okay. So that's what I got. And I only worried about the R equation here. So what I did is. Yeah, first, made the assumption that we're not moving close to the scale at which curvature matters. And, you know, curvature, we have the kr at the top, and it's close to zero in our universe. So I forgot about that and changed it around so we get factors of dt in the bottom instead of d lambda getting. Changing DREQ to V, we just solve. Which gives the solution set.
Okay. So you don't have 1 minus KR squared?
No. That's because I made the assumption that curvature doesn't matter here.
Oh, you made that assumption. So you neglected K? Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see.
I tried solving it with it in, but it got something very complicated, and it just looks a lot simpler. So
you do it, yeah. But I guess these are kind of consistent with each other. The thing I'm curious there is must be an integration constant somewhere, which you don't have. So why are you missing? Is there an integration constant there?
You didn't integrate anything. You know, that's the point. We just.
And actually, the weird thing about that is that the curvature would affect the velocity just because. It causes a dependence on R in that equation, and that if we're on the time scale that is about constant, you would still vary the velocity just by varying R, which seems often.
But I don't think that's right. abnormal, because your metric does depend on a space, so it's not that you expect a constant velocity, but there is a spatial dependence of your metric. So I think that's fine. That equation is fine. It's probably consistent with this. There is. I am curious why there is no integration constant there though. Because you know you can kick apart any particle with any velocity that you want, right? So there must be an integration constant that tells you that dependent.
Wait, so just thinking, if in that case the particle doesn't have constant velocity, wouldn't its energy change? Just by moving around, in this case, it changes because space is changing, so you could argue that it's going to a different potential.
But energy isn't V squared. And the energy is some function of R times V squared. So V doesn't necessarily remain constant. So I'm going to give you an linear derivation, I think this is correct. If you neglect the curvature, and this is the correct result. This time, I want to see where the integration constant goes.
And the fact that we got different affine connections is troubling.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Because if you look at R equations with respect to lambda.
I see. Yeah. So one is. If you need k is 0, you didn't ignore k here?
No, I'm getting
better. You didn't ignore k there.
There's integration constants in the bottom part. Because they're taking the derivative, you know, there could be a constant there.
But, okay, so let's start with the equations.
I mean, the second equation is the same as Brownian's, I think.
I also have that k part.
You have the k part, yeah.
And you've got the factor of 2.
Yeah.
Are they the same? So this part is, they're not really the same. They're very different, actually. I mean, this part is like this, but then there's a factor of 2, and then this part, this.
Maybe let's go through it again and check and see what's correct.
Okay, so let's do it easy way, which is with the action. And very start up some raises, yeah. You don't want this, you want this. John Rogers, you don't want this. So,
One question, do we have two kinds of Christoffel symbols? Kind one and kind two?
Maybe. I don't think so. Why?
Because in Maple, there are two kinds of Christoffel symbols.
Yeah.
And in order to compute the Einstein tensor, uses the second kind.
Uh-huh. And which one do they use?
Second kind.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not familiar with Maple's conventions. We should look that up. Maybe you're using the wrong kind. But the way I always calculate Christoffel symbols is starting with the equation of motion, actually. So in this case, it's actually very easy. So Lagrangian is T dot squared minus R dot squared. And this is the derivative respect to lambda again, divided by 1 minus KR squared. Right? And I can define, say, chi to be just integral of dr by square root of 1 minus kr squared. So in terms of this chi, chi is just the integral of this. This is going to be just, and there is an a squared. This is just going to be p dot squared minus a squared chi dot squared. And a is a function of t. So this is the function of, this doesn't depend, there is no explicit dependence on chi here. So like the previous problem, it means that partial L by partial chi dot is a constant. And you can call it, I don't know, whatever, K, say. Oh no, if you don't computer, A, let's say. So this is going to be minus A squared chi dot. And there's a 2 which I can put in the minus 2 in this definition, so the minus 2 is cancelled. But it tells you that chi dot decays as a divided by a squared. Now, this is so this is chi dot, which is this the derivative of this here, not
quantum.
So the other Christoffel symbol is a bit more involved because instead of doing this, you have to write all the Euler Lagrange equations. But there are, it's easy because essentially whatever you get tells you all the non-vanishing components of Christoffel symbols. So you don't really have to go through Christoffel symbols one by one on the calculator and see which one is zero and which one is zero. If I just take this and write down the Euler Lagrange equations, you're going to get all the non-vanishing Christoffel symbols or connections. Automatically. So this is a very easy way of doing it. If for this problem, for the problem that have symmetry, it's even easier. You don't even have to find a Christoffel symbol because there are symmetries yet here. There is no explicit chi difference. So this is this. Now, then the next question is, what is the physical velocity? What do you mean by the physical momentum? Because this chi is a Kohoming coordinate, right? This is not the physical coordinate. Neither is r. Because basically, in Minkowski metric, so I guess what I'm trying to say is that particles, this remains constant for particles that are moving in geodesics or in an expanding universe. But of course, we know in an expanding universe, the physical distance increases with time, right? But the definition doesn't expand. So the physical VR is going to be just GRR times VR squared. Oh, sorry, a square root of this. So this is just going to be a square root of, and there's a minus sign, which doesn't matter, so it's just going to be the absolute value of this. So this is just going to be dr squared divided by 1 minus kr squared times a squared. So the physical dr, the physical distance travel, is just going to be d chi. So this was d chi for this difference. So it's just going to be a times d chi. Right? So a times chi dot is going to be going as 1a over a. This is going to be the physical velocity. So it's because it's dr physical by dt. And by the way, d lambda and dt are also the same because, why are they the same? So this is not dr by dt. This is dr by d tau. Actually, so because if you remember the definition of relativistic momentum, p mu is mass times the x mu by d tau. So I really need to get the momentum, the special part of the momentum, I really need d tau in the denominator, which is the same as d lambda, basically, for another thing. For massive particles. So this is going to be basically momentum, the special part of the momentum, divided by mass. And this is going to be proportional to one. So this is just the derivation. And now, so I think that this is consistent with this result, although I'm a bit concerned by the fact that, because, so this is V squared divided by, so you have dr squared here, but if you divide by 1 minus kr squared, if you had the minus sign here, then you would get d chi, this guy. But then, okay, so there's, this suppose 1 over a squared, and yours would be 1 over.
There is a minus
one, isn't it? Well, but the thing is that, yeah, I think there must be this. Maybe these equations are wrong, actually, because I'm thinking there are several things that don't match. This one, if you neglect the curvature, is V here VR by DT?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think for non-relativistic particles this is true as well. Because the DT and the tau, at least these two are consistent. But yes, so let's see. So how did you go from lambda to T?
Multiply through by d lambda dt squared.
Multiply this one.
Yeah. Just multiply both sides by d lambda dt squared.
By this?
No, a square on the outside.
Ah, okay. And then what?
Just that.
And this is not, this is not equal to this. Because, yeah, this is the second derivative. So, so there's going to be an extra term if you're going to do that. Because basically what you have, because you have two d by d lambdas in there, and you're replacing them by d by dt's. So instead of d by d lambda, you have d by dt, dt by d lambda. So, and this is r. And then you have a second one, d by dt. So, if you want to just if you just multiply it by d lambda by dt squared, it's going to cancel one of these. But since this other one is inside the derivative, yeah. So in the limit that dt by d lambda is one, so if lambda is close to t, which is true if your particles are close to the origin and they're not relativistic. Basically, if this term is negligible compared to t dot, then these lambda and t are the same.
Yeah, in the relativistic case, we get a lot of different things going on, like v doesn't work, something like that.
So there will be an extra term, which is basically has a time derivative of t dot lambda. So, but this is an easy way of getting the same result, and this is what we wanted. So momentum goes as 1 over a, the physical momentum of particles goes as 1 over a, right? And the next question is, what happens to the temperature? So for relativistic particles, energy is proportional to momentum because mass is negligible compared to momentum. For those particles, temperature, which goes like energy, decay is 1 over a. So for example, four photons, that's what happens. And that looks at exactly what happened here, for example, for radiation, or whatever it was.
Yeah, was it this one? Or this one?
This one, yes. For radiation, the number of photons, like the number of dark matter particles, for example, decays is 1 over a cubed. But the temperature of photons, since they are relativistic, the temperature decays as 1 over a, so the total density decays as 1 over a to the fourth. For non-relativistic particles, of course, there's a rest mass, which doesn't change, but the thermal energy, that's, or kinetic energy of particles, is proportional to p squared. So the temperature falls as 1 over a squared. Right? So if you have particles in the universe that become non-relativistic, when they are relativistic, so of course, if something is relativistic, they eventually become non-relativistic because momentum is dropping. So first momentum is large, and it's dropping as 1 over a. But when p becomes smaller than m, then it becomes non-relativistic, and temperature falls as 1 over a squared.
Which is true for anything with mass.
Anything with mass.
Photons will never become non-relativistic.
That's right, exactly. Photons will never become non-relativistic, but other particles, say neutrinos, for example, will do that. But interesting thing that you notice is that the momentum always, in an expanding universe, momentum times A is constant. And there is a very easy way and intuitive way to see this, it's not obvious, But you know, in quantum mechanics, momentum is the same as the wave number, right? H bar k is momentum. So this is, says that the k decays as 1 over a, the wave number. This is just to say that the wavelengths are expanding with the scale factor. So if you have waves that have the same number of periods in a co-moving scale, and as universe expands, that co-moving scale expands in physical coordinates, the physical wave number goes down as 1 over a. So there is an so there are different ways of getting at this dependence of momentum on a. So this is very fundamental in expanding. It just comes from the fact that if everything is expanding, the wave number of any particle is decays as 1 over a. And it's interesting because this comes from quantum mechanics. Everything I did here is classical, but this wave interpretation of particles is quantum mechanical. So there is this interesting correspondence between the wave description of particles and the wave particle correspondence that both give you the same answer. Okay, perfect. Now, so we learned quite a bit of cosmology, and since we already had, all of us have had this course before, maybe it was a nice review. So hopefully next week is going to be a bit more challenging than this week. We'll see. But thank you very much. And I think I figured out what the problem with the Schwarzschild metric, but it's a bit astray. But it's easy. It's easy to be done. It turns out it's not going to be exactly equivalent to the massive non-relativistic case, but you can use the same method that you used for point particles, point mass particles. It's going to be just a one-dimensional integral that can be taken. And you should all, if you haven't done it already, you should do it. Thank you very much.